The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Inspirational women are increasingly popular in the news and media, but many go unheard and their stories are never told. Women to Watch with Susan Rocco captures the stories of many women who truly make a difference. Women to Watch is the vehicle for developing new leaders, encouraging younger generations, and in building self-esteem for future entrepreneurs.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to another week of Women to Watch here on WWDB, Talk 860, and womentowatch.net. I'm thrilled to be in the studio this afternoon with two exceptional women who I will introduce in just a moment. If you're listening and you'd like to join the show, we would always welcome your participation and questions for our guests. You can dial 888-329-3306. That's 888-329-3306. And also a reminder to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, where we post a lot of wonderful photographs of our women and some information on upcoming events all around Women to Watch. A quick thank you as well to our sponsors who help me to bring you the show every week, Entrust Financial, Holy Redeemer Health System, Marketron Incorporated, and Mount St. Joseph Academy. So I am pleased to welcome, I have two women, as I mentioned. One is with me in the studio, and the other is calling by phone. In the studio with me is Julia Klein. Julia is the chairwoman and CEO at C.H. Briggs Company, which is one of the largest independently owned distributors of specialty building materials on the East Coast. And on the phone, we have Joanna Drake Earl, who is the general partner at Core Ventures Group. Core Ventures Group is a seed stage technology startup fund that invests in serial entrepreneurs. Julia, welcome to the show.
Hi, Susan. Thank you.
And Joanna, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Glad to have you. Julia and I had an opportunity to chat a little before the show because she was here with me in the studio, and I mentioned to her that I always think it's important to give the listeners and the audience a little bit about your background and where you came from. And I thought I would start with you, Joanna. Wondered if you might be able to tell me where you grew up and a little bit about your backstory, your family, some aspirations as a young woman, and perhaps any challenges that you faced on your path to your current position.
Sure. Well, those are a lot of prompts and questions, so I'll try to be succinct.
Okay.
But I grew up, for the most part, in Chicago and still have very strong ties here, where I'm actually calling from today. I serve on the board of a business that my family owns that's helmed by my stepmother, who is also a C200 organization member that you'll hear about. So I'm back here quite frequently, but I moved out to the West Coast to attend college at the University of California at Berkeley and then stayed on for a master's degree at Stanford and have been residing there ever since. It's very hard to move away once you get plugged into the innovation ecosystem in Silicon Valley.
Mm.
And the summary of my career arc is after leaving Stanford, I joined Booz Allen and Hamilton for about 5 years, where I was consulting with some of the leading media, entertainment, and then tech companies, and then had a long stint where I began many media tech startups, and the most well-known of which is a company called Current TV, which is co-founded by Vice President Gore and business partner Joel Hyatt. And as a founding executive there, I had the great privilege of building that company over almost a decade, predominantly as COO, and creating one of the first social media companies before there was a category.
Mm.
Very quickly after Current, I took a little bit of time to do angel investing and advising as I was figuring out my next career move. I joined a very now preeminent female angel investor group called Broadway Angels. And in the course of advising early stage founders and investing, I found that my background as an operator building companies from scratch, in addition to my network to talent in the Silicon Valley ecosystem, was so strong that it gave me an advantaged position as a seed stage investor. At the same time, I saw that there was a lack of female founders despite their tremendous potential and market vision getting funded. And so it inspired me to join forces with a partner in Core Ventures Group, which is a relatively young seed stage investment fund.
Joanna, was your dream to go into business when you were a young woman? Is it something you always wanted to do?
It is true that I always fantasized about wearing business suits since the age of 7 or 8. My father was an international business person. In fact, we relocated to Japan when I was only 8 years old, and that began a lifelong attachment to the Japanese market, which is also an important part of our fund today. And my mother and my stepmother have both been very successful businesswomen, so I've been surrounded by inspirational leaders around me, and truth be told, I've been tagging along with the C200 organization since I was in my early 20s as a guest, and have been very privileged to have a lot of inspiring women ahead of me in regards to being a pioneer in female-founded businesses and running large businesses, including a stint as the CEO of a public mobile company.
Right. You know, and I should mention that the reason I have both Joanna and Julia with me today is they are both members of the Committee 200, which is a foundation that supports and celebrates and helps to advance women business leaders. Julia, why don't you talk just for a few minutes about your background, where you grew up and went to school and perhaps your aspirations.
Sure. One of the things I just love about hearing other women's stories, especially in the Committee of 200 ecosystem, is that everybody is so different. My story couldn't be any more different from Joanna's, and yet we share the same desire to foster and celebrate and encourage other women in business leadership. I grew up in Reading, Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia, in a small city, in a small family where both of my grandfathers and one grandmother were entrepreneurs. My father's an entrepreneur, and I'm a third-generation family business owner. I bought the company in 1990, so a long time ago at this point. But I grew up with absolutely zero interest in business. Zero. Less than zero. I thought it was unpleasant, not interesting, all kinds of things. And to my father's great credit, he would always just smile and say, so, you know, maybe you'll come around at some point.
What were you interested in?
I wanted to be an FBI agent. Ooh. I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to skate in the ice capades. I didn't dream for one second about wearing a business suit. Didn't even dawn on me that that would be an interesting thing to do. I was an undergraduate political science major at the College of Worcester in Ohio, a wonderful small liberal arts school where I now serve as a trustee. Mm-hmm. And after that, did a bit of a stint in the nonprofit world and realized that that was not for me. I went to graduate school at the University of Chicago. Joanna and I have that great Chicago connection together. And then went to Washington to work on political campaigns. And I did that for a number of cycles for all kinds of fabulous candidates, some who won, more who lost, but just terrific experience building a campaign. You know, we're in such a political environment right now. Campaign work is the ultimate kind of entrepreneurial startup and ultimate meritocracy in many ways. So I learned a great deal in my political life, including having the great good fortune of working for an entrepreneur in Northern Virginia as he was running for lieutenant governor. His name is Don Beyer. He's now a congressman. He was a former ambassador. He's probably in Philadelphia today for the convention. And I'm always grateful to his example of being an entrepreneur and a civic and political leader. And it was really his example that encouraged me to go back to my family business, buy in, buy the company. And the last 24 years or so have gone by really quickly.
Yeah, and we should mention a very non-traditional industry that you're in, you know, the building industry. And I wanted to ask you real quickly what your grandmother did as an entrepreneur, because that was, you know, unlikely back then.
Sure. The C.H. Briggs Company was founded in my grandparents' garage. It's one of those terrific all-American entrepreneurial success stories.
Oh, I love that.
And my grandfather, C.H. Harry Briggs, mm-hmm. and my grandmother, Georgiana Briggs, worked together side by side. I have wonderful memories of her beautifully manicured nails. holding a pencil, working the adding machine really quickly. So they built the company together, mm-hmm. And that was a great role model for me.
Yeah, wonderful. You mentioned you had a son. Any aspirations for him to go into the family business? That's a loaded question, I'm sure, especially if he's listening.
He'll be a senior in college. He's, like many millennials, has a real global outlook, multilingual, interested in all kinds of things around the world. I don't think that coming back to Reading's really in his worldview right now.
Well, the truth is you can do business anywhere today. He wouldn't have to be there. You mentioned the political climate, and certainly we have a lot going on here in Philadelphia with the DNC. And I had the privilege of sitting down with Gloria Allred yesterday downtown in Philadelphia, and to talk about her role there and what she was hoping would be the outcome. She's a delegate for California. What I wanted to ask both you and Joanna is, what is it you hope to see should we see the very first woman ever as president? Joanna, I'd like to start with you. We are all involved in lots of things, organizations and workshops and things that help support women and advance the leadership. But I'm wondering if there's something in particular that you would like to see come about should we actually elect the first female as the president.
Well, we're on our way out there to join in the activities on Wednesday, so we'll be cheering along for Hillary Clinton. I've had the fun and opportunity to watch her career for quite some time. My stepmother grew up with her in the suburbs of Chicago, attending ballet class and church and eventually junior high school. So we've had a great chance to watch her career on the sidelines and have been so impressed with her over the years and what she has achieved as a leader on so many fronts that it's so exciting that the most qualified candidate happens to be a woman this time around. And assuming she becomes the next president, I think it will be such a breakthrough for multiple fronts of leadership across business, politics, and almost every avenue for the country. It's not unlike what we have faced in regards to the dismal numbers of representation of female leadership in tech companies and particularly in venture capital. But what we're finding is that as we see a couple of the pioneers break through, establish tremendous track records, have unequivocal impact, both performance results and ability to be collaborative in the ecosystems that they cultivate and thrive through, it fosters a terrific pipeline of talent coming in that might not have been inspired before. So as we, being members of C200, we've seen that at play in regards to women taking on very significant operational responsibilities for companies. The total C200 member companies actually generate more than $1.4 trillion in annual revenues. And I, in my own corner of Silicon Valley, am really excited about females growing the numbers of C-level and founders of tech companies, as well as the venture capitalists who, of course, control the destiny of so much of the gazillions of dollars flowing into new companies. And I think having Hillary Clinton at the helm of the country will propel women on so many sectors and so many roles, and I couldn't be more excited.
Let's talk about that for a second, because we have definitely seen numerous historic firsts over the past couple of years for women, and I jotted down just a couple of them. Obviously, Hillary Clinton, Theresa May, the British Prime Minister, Christine Lagarde, the head of the International Monetary Fund, Angela Merkel, Chancellor of Germany, Janet Yellen, Chair of the Federal Reserve, and Mary Barra, CEO of General Motors. What I wanted to ask both you and Julia was, do you believe we're at a tipping point? You know, where do you feel this these accomplishments really put us as a country? Julia?
Well, this is a glass half full, glass half empty kind of question, I think. Sometimes we say, if you can't see it, you can't be it. And I'm not sure I really believe that, but I do believe with my entire heart that if you can see it, you can be it. So now we have women in public life around the globe leading countries, leading organizations, really setting policy at the highest level. And that is a vision that every little girl in this country and countries around the world can look at and say, I can see that, so I can be that. And I don't think we can underestimate the really critical importance of that. I believe we're at a singular point in time when I don't know that it's a tipping point per se, but we're at the point where this is no longer unusual. What's unusual is, in the United States, our really dismal numbers in terms of public leadership compared to countries all around the globe. If you look at board leadership, which is something the Committee of 200 is focused on, we really have not moved the needle at all over the last 10 years. So there is lots and lots of work to be done in encouraging young women to look at business, to look at public life as important career paths, and also to have young men understand that we're all better when there's lots of diversity and lots of different kinds of thinking around the table. As we see more, we're able to create more of that environment, and that has wonderful benefits for the globe.
Yeah. Joanna, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think Julia articulated her perspective so beautifully, and it resonates with me. I certainly hope we're at that tipping point. I'm not a global political expert, but in my own realm of tech companies and startups and investing in particular, what I've noted is that many of the characteristics that women tend to have and thrive with in regards to calm under stress, collaboration, egoless analytics, can be brought to bear certainly in important business decision-making and company building and investing, just as they can on the world stage in regards to political decision-making and partnership development. And so I'm, as I said, I couldn't be more excited about seeing this change happening the world over, as well as across different business sectors.
And I would say that, you know, just mentioning the women I just did has to point to the fact that we are somewhere much further than we have been, in the past. And so I do think that it's an incredibly exciting time for women. And there are those examples of seeing it and being it for the younger generation. I guess one of the obvious questions and one that I ask often on the show is, why do you believe we still have so far to go? We have had how many women pioneers ahead of us that have been doing, maybe not in the same way, but the same, they've had the same motivation to really encourage women to step out and lead across all industries. Is it a cultural barrier? Is it family responsibilities? Is it a lack of confidence, you know, just kind of what's in women's DNA. Julia, tell me what your thought is on that, or is it a combination of all of those things and more?
Well, I was going to say yes, yes, and yes, until you said the DNA part, and that I'm not so sure of.
Okay.
But I think there's a myriad of reasons that we don't have the kind of results that we're looking for in terms of shared leadership and creating shared value across industries and across our country. I think all of those things matter. What you're trained to do, what you're interested in doing, who encourages you, how you get moving, who supports you and sponsors you and mentors you, all, and where you look for opportunities. I think all of those things are true. Confidence, completely. But you get confidence from taking risk and living through it. And where do you learn to take a risk? Hopefully you've had experiences as a kid, as a student growing up to do that, but not everybody has. There is absolutely conscious and unconscious bias in the workplace, in public life, everywhere. All of those things are true. So I think when you look at what's real and how do you overcome that, I know that I feel really compelled to help other women, to help entrepreneurs grow companies, to help students think about business and public service in new ways, to encourage and mentor everywhere I can so that those kinds of reasons start to be minimized.
And Joanna, I wanted to ask you, working in Silicon Valley in the tech industry, I know that I have learned some of the reasons why we should and do need more women in technology. Can you tell me, you know, explain to the listeners what it is that you've seen as a benefit to having women in this field?
Sure. Well, I'll give you a specific example, and that is in regards to funding female founders. So I had, as I mentioned, been involved in the startup of several media tech companies, three to be exact, and then I had a public COO role in a mobile company. Taken a break, and as I was angel investing and advising, one of the things that struck me to my core was that I was seeing a lot of fantastic female founders who had terrific backgrounds, had very strong market visions, well thought through business models, and looked very well poised to raise money and become founders of startups. But they were indeed they were really struggling to raise money. And it's not surprising if you think about the dynamics where, you know, anywhere from 92 to 96% of the venture funds include all male partners making the decisions about where the funding goes. And it's not necessarily any malicious intent on the part of the investors, but what I witnessed myself is that there were either six of the female founders that I ended up investing in, they were either not being taken seriously as having the capacity to build a successful startup from scratch, or they were going after a market that their audience just did not see and didn't understand. And so as we think about how do we get more diversity in the body of decision makers around where venture capital goes, you can imagine that there will be far more compelling and impactful companies with interesting solutions and services for corners of the consumer and enterprise audience that have not been well represented by virtue that they don't have the same experiences or look like the investors behind the venture funds. So I think that is an area where I'm really focused and where I was inspired to take a seat on the other side of the table and, in fact, become an investor. And I think the results that we've been able to show through, for example, in the Broadway Angels, which I mentioned as a preeminent female angel investor group, in regards to the performance of the investments with a much higher degree of diversity represented in the founder classes and in the boards, I think that bears out for not only market performance and results for the investors and the founders, but also breakthroughs in regards to the kinds of products and services that we can bring to market to female audiences and other diverse constituencies that are underserved today.
And there's all kinds of research that shows that when boards are more diverse, when funders are more diverse, and management teams are more diverse, results are better. And when it comes right down to it, that data matters. And when results are better, that's what moves the needle.
And it's not from firsthand experience, it's not always comfortable. So I'm in our seed fund is just my partner, Shinya Akamine, and myself. And he happens to be born in Japan, so he's Japanese by nationality, although he grew up himself in Silicon Valley and founding companies. But because we come at problem solving from such different perspectives with such different backgrounds. I also, Julia, was a political scientist by training in undergrad. He was a electrical engineering that we, as we think about opportunities for investment or even how we help founders solve problems and build their companies, we're coming at each conversation with such different perspectives that we confess at least weekly to each other that we're making each other very uncomfortable. But the end result is probably more rigorous analysis and a more thought-through perspective on where we should be investing and how we can help companies be successful.
I think that's a great point. When you have diversity of experience and backgrounds and styles around the table, it doesn't make it easy and smooth by definition, but it does make the results better. And I think that's where we need to keep our focus.
And you know, we use the word innovation often, and I think that's where innovation comes from. If you constantly have the same people with the same background around a table trying to be creative and thoughtful, chances are you're going to continually have the same outcome. That kind of leads me to a question I had for both of you. Then, and what do you believe the role is that men should play in trying to help foster more diversity, in particular women? Whether it's mentoring, sponsoring within corporations, or perhaps demonstrating their support of having more women leaders at events and organizations. What is the role that you believe they should play, Julia?
Well, one of the things that I tell all my male friends who are, to a person, great guys, is that it's not enough to be a good guy. No, it's not enough to not be blatantly discriminatory. It's not enough to not ignore people. That being a good guy does not help us move the needle, and it doesn't help their daughters fulfill their dreams. So when I say that, I'm often greeted with looks of almost astonishment, because to a person, my male friends all know they're good guys, right? They don't have a biased bone in their body. But it has not dawned on them to invite a woman colleague to play golf, to make sure that she's included in the conversation if she seems to be ignored. So as soon as they can turn that corner and realize that they have something proactively that they can do to encourage their women colleagues, to bring them more into the conversation, to sponsor and mentor and promote, that's when the light bulb goes off and things really start to happen.
Why are they not asking women for their input? You know, that's what I want to know. Where is the lack of knowing that their colleagues, their female colleagues, might have something to offer, have some ideas?
Yes, yeah, so, you know, I wouldn't want to paint a huge
brush. I know, and I don't want to.
Right. You know, I don't speak for all womankind, and I wouldn't speak for all mankind here as well. But I think our cultural norms are so deeply ingrained that it's often easy to just overlook, to not pay attention, to not step out to be helpful, to not make a purposeful move to be encouraging. And as soon as the good guys really recognize that, they change behavior and get right to it. So some of the best sponsors and mentors, especially in larger corporations, some of the best that I've seen are some terrific men. And then there's a huge responsibility, I believe, for women to help other women as well.
Yeah. Joanna, I'm wondering if there's any personal experiences you could share where you've worked with a gentleman in the technology field, and perhaps you've witnessed them have kind of an aha moment, you know, working with you.
Sure. Well, I think that Julia was making two primary points, one about what you can do if you actually are a male executive in a corporation to advance sponsorship of women, and then the women's role themselves, right? I'm happy to speak to both. On the former, I had a terrific experience where in the founding of Current TV, I had an amazing male boss and sponsor who gave me all end of opportunities within the company to play significant leadership roles in areas that I didn't have experience with. So I felt quite sponsored. And not only that, but truth be told, we closed funding for the PPM of Current TV the Friday before I went into labor with twins on a Monday and went back to work within 2 weeks. And I don't really remember that first year of building the company and building the twins, but we were operational with a 24/7 cable network and an online production studio. And what I found over the course of the next couple of years, which were not unchallenging for me as a mother and of a company and twins, was that the flexibility that they instituted into the working environment for me was enormous. Mm. And they joked before I went into labor that the best thing that you could ever do is hire a woman who's type A on bed rest, because all she can do is work all day. And maybe that's how we got the funding closed. But after the girls were born, to their great credit, they gave me all latitude in the world to work the way I wanted to, even though I had large teams reporting to me, and eventually international properties as well. And I managed to balance that out, and hopefully, I hope my daughters will say, be successful. successful on both fronts. So really having open-mindedness about the way women are working, particularly if they happen to have children and young children in particular, I think is really a proactive, important thing to do. I will also say that I think, you know, it's incumbent on male colleagues and executives to support promotions and very specifically to support compensation that's at the same level as male peers, if not more. You know, I think there is a tendency, and the data bears this out, to undercompensate females in similar roles. And we also know historically women are not great advocates of themselves when it comes to negotiating their compensation. So I've had instances where I've been promoted into the same role of a male and been offered lower compensation, but, you know, was able to call my sponsors and boss to the mat and get that addressed and proceed to be effective at arguing for equal compensation over time. And I think that equal compensation gives you the confidence and eventually the platform to also continue to assume more and more roles. I also think there's a stylistic element that has to do, you know, we know that women talk more. They use a lot more words per minute and per hour. And there's a tendency to not hear them, if it's especially if it's a room full of mostly males and few females. But the women need to figure out how to cut through and be effective with more concise communication patterns. But I also think it's important for men to figure out how to adapt to female communication styles as well. And there's probably a happy medium somewhere in the middle. But I have had the experiences in my career where I've been told to not be who I am, to let my hair down, to play a different role, to go take the guys out drinking. And that's really not my style, and I don't appreciate that feedback because I don't find it particularly professional, but I do like feedback that helps me be more succinct and effective in a conference, in a presentation format, especially if it's a predominantly male audience. Mm-hmm. So I think those are constructive, almost tactical things that male peers and supporters can adopt. And then I as Julia said, I think it's very important for female executives to invite female colleagues and friends and up-and-comers to the table. You know, of my cohort of professional women, I find that none of them have the problem of leaning in. They don't have a problem with leaning in. In fact, they probably need to learn how to lean out a little more on an individual basis. But what they could all benefit from, which we've been forming groups to organize around this principle, but really in making sure that women are represented at the table, whether it's boards or conferences or up-and-coming pipeline of talent. So, for example, I was invited to one of the most preeminent and private venture-backed entrepreneur meets venture capital annual tech conferences about 7 years ago and have been attending every year. But I almost didn't go the first year because when the venture capitalists who invited me to attend came to see me, I really loved the format and the opportunity to be present with all these amazing entrepreneurs and investors. But I asked him, may I please have the invitation list because I need to justify to my company that I can take 2.5 days off to go participate. And when I got the invitation list, I was very disappointed to see, I think it was probably 7% females in the 175 slots. So I just went back to him and said, you know what, I love the format. I really like what you're doing, and I would very much like to participate. But I'm frankly uncomfortable that there's so few women represented. And he said, well, you know, I've been trying really hard to invite high-caliber women, but they don't seem to want to come, or I can't find them. And I said, I'll tell you what, I'll make a deal with you. I will come if you give me you know, up to 15 slots for women that I promise will be as high caliber as the males attending, and I will do the invitation. And he said, sure, you got it. And lo and behold, fast forward 7 years, the representation of female execs from even the Silicon Valley environment, which does not have a lot of female women in founder positions and investor groups, is unusually high. So I think there is an opportunity for all of us to invite more female colleagues to whatever table we're sitting at and sponsor them as well.
I agree. And isn't it so typical of women to see a problem and take charge and do something about it? Listen, we're going to take a very quick break for our sponsors. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about C200 and how it's top tier women and how we might be able to help some of the women that are climbing their way up there. We'll be right back.
There are 365 days to schedule a mammogram. Today is as good as any. Holy Redeemer Breast Care makes it easy. We offer the latest technology, like 3D mammography, an automated breast ultrasound that help find cancers in dense breast tissue. Plus, our same-day readings mean same-day peace of mind. Make today the day you schedule a mammogram. It's easy to request an appointment online at holyredeemer.com/mammogram.
Since 1858, Mount St. Joseph Academy has been educating girls to be leaders, founders, and independent thinkers. Students are taught to be collaborative, courageous, compassionate, confident, and spiritual. In this student-centered environment, the young women are transformed by recognizing their own potential and are encouraged to use it to make a difference in the world. To learn more about Mount St. Joseph Academy, go to www.msjacad.org or call 215-233-3177. That's msjacad.org or 215-233-3177.
Welcome back, everyone, to another week of Women to Watch. My name is Sue Rocco, and I'm joined this afternoon by Julia Klein, Chairwoman and CEO at C.H. Briggs Company, and Joanna Drake Earle, who's calling in. Joanna, where are you calling from? I didn't get to ask you.
I'm calling in from Chicago.
From Chicago. And Joanna is a general partner at Core Ventures Group. One of the things I had just mentioned to Julia was that I'm often interested in women's philosophy for managing people, women who have achieved the levels that you both have. What is your own personal philosophy for trying to generate enthusiasm from your team and your employees and have them feel as though the work that they're doing matters? Julia, I'll start with you.
Well, this is a question that could take all afternoon.
Oh.
I think it's so interesting. You know, my philosophy, such that it is, and my style has really evolved over my time leading this company. I only had one model when I was 28, 29, and starting out, and that was my father. We only worked together for a couple years. Since then, I've had to establish more of my own style. Now, that was a long time ago. And the Committee of 200 has really played an essential role for me in showing me lots of different ways that women can lead. And there's not one male way and one female way. And the most important thing is to develop your own way. I was very highly influenced by a management thinker named Warren Bennis, who taught at UCLA for many, many years. And his philosophy was you have to become more and more of yourself as a leader. And that really resonated with me. I think the challenge for all of us is becoming more and more of ourselves. What does that mean in different stages of our lives and at different ages? In our company, we've had tremendous growth. We've had a down cycle through the construction industry. We've been lots of different companies over the course of time, and I've come to believe really fundamentally for women that if you don't want to deal with a glass ceiling, then build your own house. But if you build your own house as an entrepreneur, you can be very much on your own, and that can be a scary and risky place to be. So I've learned my management philosophy, my leadership approach. I've learned from watching others, asking lots of questions, and trying to pull out the best from the people around me. I've been very, very fortunate. I've had tremendous success in creating a great team at all levels in the company who've really been able I've learned from them as much as they've learned from me, certainly. And we've been able to create a team environment that's been able to succeed over a very long period of time. My approach is more collaborative, more hands-off, I have to say, particularly now at this age and stage of my life when I have a professional management team that can really run the company. They don't need me, and they're not terribly interested in anything I have to say on a minute-by-minute basis, which is great. That's exactly what I've been working for many years. But cultivating that team, attracting and retaining that kind of high-caliber talent has been critical, I think, to the success of our company.
I love what you said about, you know, working harder and harder to be yourself. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the more that you do that as a leader, the more trust you gain from the people that are working with you. Joanna, what's your leadership style?
Well, I think it's different in different contexts. In the role of a seed stage investor, we're not managing troops, per se. Mm. And if anything, our model is to work effectively for the founder's charter that we have invested in, and we roll up our sleeves and help them with all aspects of their business. That's actually not dissimilar, as I reflect on it, for the style that I had as I was running large teams around the world and scaling businesses, and that is that my approach is typically to work for those who technically report up to me, and what I mean by that is I've always seen my role as responsible for taking the company objectives, helping them to understand what their roles are in order to achieve those objectives, at the same time that I'm pulling away hurdles from their successful achievement of those objectives and supporting their own career growth. If I look back at some of the personality and professional diagnostics I've taken, I actually have a very good profile for working in early-stage startups and building from scratch. One of the old-fashioned career roles that maps to my skill set is fire brigade, which I think means, you know, in the middle of changing environment and chaos and pressure, helping to sort through where are the exit ways, how do we marshal people, how do we move forward safely with momentum. And so that's I think always been my approach, regardless of the context, whether I'm directly managing or managing the objectives for founders that we're investing in. You did say one thing earlier that I thought was really important, and that had to do with inspiration for employees and colleagues and C-level teams. What I have found throughout my career is that it's very hard to motivate employees with just cold dollar metric goals, but instead, if you have a company that has a meaningful mission that provides each employee with a sense of purpose when they come into work in the day, they will be motivated far more than the potential for big upside compensation or even hitting certain tactical metrics. And cultivating a meaningful mission in the culture of companies, I think, is really important. And we're at a very exciting stage, I believe, in the startup world. When we started Current TV, it was one of the very few venture-backed startups with a commercial business model, but that also had an underlying social mission, and that was to provide a platform to voices that were not heard in some of the most powerful medium outlets in the world. Fast forward, I see many venture not many, but some large and growing venture groups, as well as certainly many startups these days, who actually are embedding in their corporate charters and missions a purpose, and not just to get a product to market or break through with the technology, but to have a meaningful impact on the world. And I think that, in the end, is the most inspirational environment for young talent to work in.
I think that's a terrific point, and I would build on that and say that people can find purpose and meaning everywhere. In our company at CH Briggs, our customers build beautiful and useful things, gorgeous buildings, beautiful residential environments, operating rooms, education facilities, things that really have meaning. And our customers, small and mid-sized manufacturers, architects and designers, are creating environments that are really important in their communities. They're the backbone of the American economy in many, many ways. And that might not be super sexy to some people. It is to me.
It depends on how you describe
<That's right>.
It.
But there is real meaning in helping those entrepreneurs grow their businesses and create those environments. And that motivates us every day. And I think I'd take it even a step further and say that there's purpose and meaning and opportunity in all kinds of industries, in all kinds of towns. I think it's really easy to listen to Joanna and the incredible things she and her teams are doing in Silicon Valley. That is sexy, like by definition. But it's only a half step to me to look at companies like Briggs with lots of trucks and lots of warehouses and lots of inventory and find real purpose and meaning in growing that part of the economy too, in small cities and kind of forgotten industries all around the world. And it's I think the ability to see that and communicate it is what attracts talent and retains talent and encourages people to grow.
Yeah, I so agree with that. I think it's important to focus on what that end result is. What kind of impact are you having as a company, and make sure that the people that are working for you are reminded of that and see it, and not get caught up in just the kind of the day-to-day tasks. But the top companies today, as Joanna mentioned, are so much more focused on having something purposeful or a cause or a mission tied to their industry, and we're seeing that more and more. And I think millennials are looking for that. They're talking about that. Here's a question for both of you. If you had the opportunity to stand in front of a room of young women who are in college and just about to graduate, and you think about the experiences that you have both had in your kind of non-traditional industries as a woman and really found such great success, what's the first thing that comes to mind for you that you would want to say to these young women to encourage them to believe in their own capabilities as they venture out? Joanna, do you want us to take that first?
Sure. Well, I love a motto that my stepmother uses all the time. It's actually the DSC Logistics business motto as well, which is ready for anything. And I think that has been a helpful guidance post for me over the years, because at the end of the day, no matter how well you think you are planning your career, inevitably it takes different turns and areas of emphasis. So when I had left Stanford, I had actually spent years studying U.S.-Japanese business and was very inspired to either work for a Japanese company in Silicon Valley or a Silicon Valley company in Japan. But I was finding at the time that the businesses were not appreciating the years I had put into language, culture, political science studies, and really just wanted generalizable business experience. So it led me to Booz Allen Hamilton, where I was lucky enough on my first day on the job to get the first strategy project in the film industry in Hollywood. And fast forward, I worked for 3.5 years with some of the leading entertainment companies in Hollywood, and then eventually back to Silicon Valley tech companies. It distracted me from a connection with Japan, but at the same time, it was one of the most exciting and terrific experiences I had working with leading executives at a very young age and, frankly, very inexperienced in the Silicon Valley tech and the media and entertainment world, and poised me eventually to, when I got bit by the startup bug, to begin a series of media tech startups, some of which you've heard about today. So if there is anything I could say is, one, it's very hard to plan your destiny. I'm still working on my very long-term goal, which has something to do with the U.S. and Japan, but you've got to be prepared to take advantage of opportunities as they arrive. Mm. And, one little plug, I think, in support of Julia's perspectives on her what might be perceived as a more traditional industry. I sit on the board of DSC Logistics, and it's at the forefront of thinking through supply chain and logistics solutions for Fortune 100 companies. And when I first joined the board, I have to admit, even though it was a family business begun by my stepmother's father over 30 years ago, over 50 years ago, I thought, what am I doing here? I'm a Silicon Valley tech kid. What do I have to add, and, am I really interested in this business? And over the years, I've come to realize that, as Julie mentioned, you think about the transportation, the logistics industry, it's at the backbone of everything in the, in our country, in the world, and there is some of the best talent now coming out of the top undergraduate and grad programs coming in to think about what we can do with these incredible capabilities as they evolve and how we better serve enterprise customer needs. And that is terribly exciting and doesn't have to be the superficial sexiness of a media tech startup out of Silicon Valley.
Mm, right. You know, I think I'd say three different things to a group of young women. The Girl Scouts of the USA did a survey a couple years ago, and the girls said that they weren't really interested in business because what they wanted to do was something that helps other people and something that changes the world. And they didn't see that business was a perfect vehicle to do that. So the first thing I would say is that business is a fantastic vehicle to make an important difference for others and to do all the things in the world that you think are important. And I'm not sure that that's a message that is very clear to young women at all. And part of what we're doing in the Committee of 200 is our reach out programs in high schools, colleges, and MBA programs to really stress that point. So that would be my number one point. I think number two, I would echo Sheryl Sandberg. She wrote in the book Lean In that if you're going to have a partner, pick the right one. You know, pick really well. Pick somebody who's going to support and encourage and challenge you. And I would suggest that that choice of partner is more important than your college major, your 10-year plan, the industry in which you start, or the career skills that you use in the very beginning. That's a critical decision, and probably maybe a bit too touchy-feely when you're giving a business presentation with a group of young women, or young men, for that matter. But I think that's a critical point. It's been the number one factor in my career success has been that I picked a terrific partner, my wonderful high school sweetheart. We've been married forever. That's the single most important decision that I've made. And then third, I think I'd say to a group of young women kind of on the cusp of jumping into the world is, this is a little biblical, is to be not afraid, to step out and step in and lean in and give things a try and take risk. It sounds a lot easier than it is, but I think constant encouragement to not be afraid to try new things and try everything will serve you well no matter where your career goes.
Great advice, but on both sides. I think it's always important to select people and align with people that lift you up and make you better. I'd love to hear from both of you, you know, if you could share a personal challenge that you have faced that really was an experience that allowed you to gain a better perspective on your own level of confidence because you worked through it. And it can be just something that's, you know, difficult for you day to day now outside of your profession. What are some of the things that are just kind of a challenge for you that as you work through them, you can share with the listeners that, you know, you too, as, you know, someone who has been highly successful from a business standpoint, you have had your own adversities and challenges to overcome.
You know, one of the things I like best about the Committee of 200 group is that I have, I'm surrounded by wonderful women of all ages, and they have stories like you would not believe. You know, I look ahead and I see some women in their 80s who've built fabulous businesses and then lost them. Mm. You know, markets changed, fraud happens, terrible illness happens, bad decisions happen. They've built businesses, lost them, started new ones, completely changed careers, have become great philanthropists. And I look ahead and I say, oh, you know, if that's what the next 30 years looks like, that's fantastic. You know, it makes me know that resiliency is one of the most important skills you could possibly have. You know, boy, among the many challenges I've faced, I think finding the right style, I talked about that a bit earlier, as a young entrepreneur, developing a style that was more inclusive, that wasn't combative, that was hard for me to learn. Helping steer the company through a downturn, very, very challenging. Fortunately, I have a terrific team around me. Running a company through different life cycles, always difficult. And, you know, being able to find the right combination of engaged and letting a team really run on their own. That's a constant day in and day out kind of battle. My goal is to get a little bit better at it every single day.
You mean let go of control?
Yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. And I think what you said earlier ties to what Joanna was talking about, you know, having the ability to pivot, mm-hmm. and always being aware that everything you've planned may not fall into place. That's such an important thing to be able to do. Joanna, is there something that, comes to mind for you that has really been a challenge for you day to day?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's just day to day, but I certainly went through, experienced a chapter in one of my ventures where there was a change in the CEO role, my boss, and a very new culture instituted pretty quickly that was not in keeping with the core DNA and values of the company. And in the course of that management and cultural transition was really questioned and somewhat marginalized in regards to my own role and skill set. And we ended up agreeing that what my role, my style, my results were very different from what he represented coming into the company. And I actually took a page from his book and said, hey, why don't we hire a consultant to see if they can't help us see each other's strengths and weaknesses and figure out how to be a complementary team together. This is as I was playing the role of COO. And as we all know, a COO should, if effective, fill in for gaps and be a complementary balance for the CEO depending upon their strengths and their vision and how they want to spend their time. Well, we hired a consultant, and she came in and did weeks of diagnostic work and interviews, and she came back and she said, I've never worked with anyone who knows themselves better than you do. Here are all your strengths. You're exactly as you say you are. You've delivered these results to the company for a very long time, and these are the contributions you've made. And unfortunately, it appears that his culture and style does not fit the company. And so I guess in hindsight, I would say having the confidence to know oneself, what one is good at, being open to constructive criticism and different roles is very important. But if you're confronted with what is ultimately an antagonistic situation that doubts your own capabilities, I think to use different mechanisms to clarify what those doubts and capabilities are and make sure that you are not marginalized in the process. And so that was a tough experience that I went through. Came out the other end feeling that much more confident and effective in my ability to navigate waters with new CEOs and, for that matter, boards as they change culture.
What a smart thing to do to bring in a third party, you know, and not, you know, sometimes that's so needed in kind of eliminating the the word I'm looking for, when you're, you know, when you're struggling with a colleague and, you know, you're not meeting in the middle, it's often really beneficiary to have a third party who comes in and doesn't have the emotion. Listen, we're at the end of the show. It was a wonderful show full of great advice. I'm so appreciative of both of you joining me this afternoon. I know how busy you are. Julia, I'll let you give the website for Committee 200 so our listeners can check it out.
I think it's c200.org.
Okay, terrific. Joanna, thank you for joining us from Chicago.
Thank you for inviting me.
And everyone, that's it for this week of Women to Watch. Please visit our website for more information at womentowatch.net. That's women, the number 2, watch.net. Thank you, Julia. Have a great week, everyone.